It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's nearing the end of April, April 25th or 26th, depending on when you're listening to this. If you're listening to this on Saturday, April 25th, it's at 9:05, and if it's Sunday, April 26th, it is 7:05. Want to give a big shout-out to Maureen Beauregard, the relatively new president and CEO of Easter Seals New Hampshire, who joined me last weekend. Very relevant show because all of the services that Easter Seal provides is still in need, in fact, probably more so during COVID-19. So it's a very interesting show that Maureen helped me with. Great shout-out to all the folks at Easter Seals for the thousands of people that they serve. Along the lines of serving people is the nationally acclaimed Jim DeRemus, who's the president of Concord Family YMCA. Jim, thank you for joining me this weekend. I know you're extremely busy trying to orchestrate the Concord YMCA during COVID, but thank you for joining me this weekend.
Tom, thank you very much for having me.
So let's start on a brighter note, although I do think that all of us have joined together. I have an expression, TWC, together we can. So the Concord YMCA website is ConcordYMCA, all one word, .org. Tell us about your history and how you wound up at the Concord YMCA.
Sure. That'd be great, Tom. Well, you know, the history of the Concord Y goes back over 160 years. The first meeting of the Concord Y occurred in October 1852. And somewhat ironic,
you weren't around then, were you?
No, none of us were around back then. But ironically enough, our main building is located at 15 North State Street in Concord. And ironically enough, the first meeting was almost directly across the street of what is now called Center Point Church. It was known back then as the First Baptist Church of Concord. So we haven't really, we've been a part of the Concord community and I think one of those foundational institutions for more than a century and a half. And well, I came to the Y about 11 years ago, and I'd been working in this community a long time in the social service arena, and I've loved my experience at the Y. I'm thrilled with the range and scope of the things that we're able to work on and to accomplish. I think we have a tremendously dedicated and committed staff team and set of volunteers. And, you know, for me, the thing that's really the most important, you know, especially at this point in my career, is that I'm a part of something that really, in a substantial way, is making a positive difference in people's lives. And so I'm very fortunate in that regard, Tom, that I can be a part of this operation.
Yeah, that's well put. I think all of us are doing what we do because in New Hampshire you can make such an impact in, you know, giving back, and the range of services are amazing. So let's just have our pre-COVID hat on for the moment. We will definitely, for the listening audience, don't worry, we'll get quickly into the YMCA's response to the crisis. But tell us the whole array of services, including after-school services and
absolutely
all the things that you do, and as well as how you've helped with memberships for the underserved citizens.
Happy to, Tom. And, Tom, it really all starts with our mission promise, which is to help strengthen the foundation of community through a focus on youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility. And everything that we do relates to at least one of those areas of focus. And when it comes to youth development, the thing that really jumps out ahead of out in front for what we have to offer is our preschool and after-school child care program. We also roll our day camp program into there. We are the largest licensed provider of child care programming in Merrimack County. We've had our preschool program and after-school programs since the early 1980s. They are both licensed plus certified programs and services. And, you know, in addition to that, in addition to providing high quality child care, we also serve a significant portion of families who qualify for financial assistance. So in the preschool program, it's in the ballpark of about 2/3 of the families. And these are all working families. These are people who have to work, and but child care is not an inexpensive service, as you know, and they benefit from the financial assistance that we can provide, and also through the state of New Hampshire. And at the after school program, it's probably in the range of about 42 or 43% of the population. So that's a very important piece of what we do. And on a daily basis, pre-COVID, we were serving in the ballpark of about 475 kids a day in Merrimack County.
Wow, that's terrific. And I don't think people realize that because I did because, as you know, I'm on the board of Early Learning New Hampshire and was chair. And, of course, we all know and you know this, and we're preaching to the choir to us anyway, but basically how society handles the 0 to 4 years and how we handle preschool and after school is the biggest correlation to, you know, success in life. And I don't think people realize the extent of your after-school program, because the other part of it, of course, and I say this with Chris Eamon at the Boys and Girls Club as well, is that the most challenging and sometimes dangerous time for children is those after-school hours when both parents have to work and maybe they're alone could be alone for 2 or 3 hours, and you know, without your program, bad stuff can happen. So I just want to commend you on that. And of course, we all know that the early learning the financial model on that is very challenging. For example, the model at NHGI just at least temporarily has closed down. So I'm sure it's put even more pressure on you. So tell us. And I want to get back to the rest of your program, sort of pre-COVID, but let's just quickly segue. So since COVID, I'm assuming, most parents are either furloughed or are working from home. So has this lessened or increased, the pressure on your program? Of course, you're also doing it, you have to do it with infection control in mind, too. So how has it all worked since COVID?
Well, Tom, our organization, it was a very, very rich discussion and deep discussion at our board. We made the decision back prior to the governor's order, stay-at-home order, to close our entire organization. And so we did not offer child care after March 18th. And we did find that the vast majority of the families either they were furloughed and they didn't have a need for child care of our population. And the reason that we made that decision was it was really about, the term that we now use, flattening the curve. On a daily basis, between our child care facility and between our main building, a slow day for us is 700 or 800 people a day coming into those doors, in and out of those doors. And an average day is 1,200. And, that is just the breeding ground. And as our board discussed, that's the breeding ground for perpetuation of this disease. And so that was a very important discussion, important decision at the board level. We had mothers with young children, some of whom are in our child care program, who felt this was very important. We also have a retired physician who weighed in on this. So that's we have not offered those services since March 18th. And of course, since the governor's stay-at-home order, the main facility would have been closed anyway as a result of that decision.
So your board went through, what we went through at our boards, and I think most boards of for-profit or non-profit organizations, and what's best for the safety of population health. So so it must people are chomping at the bit to reopen, but of course we have to. That is probably another situation where your board's getting together and saying, okay, at some point when the governor reopens parts of the economy, how that will be kind of phased in. So knowing you, you're probably already having those discussions as to how to, phase it back in.
Absolutely. And those are, that's a work in progress right now. But we're doing a lot of that planning. We're trying to do a lot of that planning. We're looking at different scenarios. We're looking at different phases, if you will. We're trying to anticipate what happens if, there are a number of questions we're asking ourselves, things like, what do we think are the things that we'll be able to do that we did before? What are the things that we will not be able to do that we did before? We're asking ourselves, what can we do now that we couldn't do before? And then, what else, what can we still not do? Those are sort of the frameworks that help us take a look at, you know, what eventualities can we plan for? How can we do it thoroughly? How can we make sure that we're providing the kinds of services that our members, our families, our community needs, and also do it in a way that is safe for all of our members and for the childcare families and safe for our employees. So it's, and every business, every organization is going through that process right now. So we have our board meeting, our monthly board meeting is scheduled for the 28th of April, excuse me. And so we'll have some preliminary presentations to make for the board at that point in time.
Yeah, that's just next Tuesday. So I know that Tuesday. I know that yeah. you're working on that and preparing yeah. for the new normal. Let's just switch back momentarily
sure.
to pre-COVID, old normal. And I yep. and I think what Jim was alluding to is that even when we come out of this, and yes, this too shall pass, there'll definitely be all of us need to prepare for a new normal, no different than when dental offices are opened up for regular procedures beyond emergencies. As probably most people know, you can only see a dentist and oral surgeon right now for emergencies. There'll be a whole new series of, you know, infection control standards. Dentists were always in tune to infection control, but it will even be more so, and there may be new mm-hmm. waiting room procedures and things like that. So I can see the planning's already taking place at Concord Family YMCA. But pre-COVID, tell us, so we talked about the preschool and after school. Tell us about some of the other programs. And the website, of course, you can look at these programs, ConcordYMCA.org. But pre-COVID, tell us about some of your other programs.
Absolutely. You know, healthy living is one of those major areas of emphasis for us, a major area of focus. And so we offer a broad array of opportunities for individuals, for families, for children, and for teenagers to develop healthy lifestyles. So that includes personal training. That includes health and wellness assessments. That includes nutritional programming. You know, we have a typical week pre-COVID, we offered a little over 70 different group exercise classes. We obviously have as you can imagine, we have a broad array of strength equipment, cardio equipment, free weights, and so forth. And then we also, it really ties in with our social responsibility area of focus. We do an awful lot with individuals in the community who may be more vulnerable. So, for example, Tom, one of the programs that I think is so important for us is we're a partner with River Bend Community Mental Health Center, a program called In Shape. And In Shape is a program that's designed for individuals who've been diagnosed with severe mental illness. And consequently, as a result of that, they typically have lifestyles that are much less healthy, and their life expectancy is much, much shorter.
So Jim, hold it there, because that is
sure.
a terrific partnership we want to talk about.
Sure.
And also, I've made an assumption that during COVID, we haven't started to see the effects yet, but mental health,
yes.
Abuse situations, those are going to be on the increase as people are suffering from anxiety, from losing a job, being quarantined, and everything else. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio with Jim Doremus, President and CEO of Concord Family YMCA, this weekend, April 25th and 26th. Big shout out to Maureen Beauregard, my guest last weekend, who did a great job describing the many thousands of people that East Cecil's, New Hampshire serves. And the Concord Family YMCA is in a similar social service way, and we were starting to talk about the partnership that the Concord Family YMCA has with Riverbend called In Shape. So why don't you take it from there, because I think this type of program is going to be even more needed, you know, during this crisis and coming out of the crisis.
And I agree with you, Tom. And just a rehash of the program, it's designed for individuals who've been diagnosed with severe mental illness, and they typically have lifestyles that really inhibit healthy living and that shorten their lifespan. And the program has actually been proven to help individuals who participate develop healthier lifestyles and improve not only their health metrics, but also their overall improvement in terms of their goals for themselves, which is really, really important. And we've been a partner in this program for, I think, at least 11 years, maybe a little bit longer since it started, I think, 12 years ago. And it's really powerful. And I think as much as anything, it's not only the fact that these individuals, they receive some individual coaching, they work on developing healthier habits for eating, they develop healthier activities and exercise habits. But the other piece of this is that, Tom, I think as you well know, one of the really challenging and damaging aspects of for individuals who are diagnosed with mental illness is the negative stigma that's attached with that. And one of the things that this program does, that we're able to provide for this program for the participants, is that the Concord Y, when you become a member of the Concord Y, it doesn't matter how you got there, you're a part of the Concord Y family. You are on par and equal with every other member. And you count the same, and, you know, we create an environment, we have created an environment, it's a real credit to our staff over a long period of time, that, you know, we're accepting and tolerant, and we help. I really truly believe that we help to destigmatize to a degree that negative image. And I think that's one of the other really important aspects of the program and something that we place an awful lot of emphasis on.
And you should be congratulated because, as you know, I think I've worked a lot with the former Supreme Court Chief Justice John Broderick on the Change Direction program and just getting, you know, the mental health awareness that it is an issue. And it's not just the obvious ones you read about in the newspaper where someone commits suicide, but it's the silent sufferers.
Yes.
And the fact that you've partnered with Riverbend is terrific. I give you a big shout out because it can be an awkward conversation, and yet, just like you said, if we can destigmatize it, like it's the way to go. And that's what I always say to my management team. Like, it's, you know, if an employee comes in and they say, "Well, I need meniscus surgery," well, that's an easy conversation. Okay, you're out for 2 weeks. Here are the papers. Yeah. See you in 2 weeks. You know, if someone comes in and says that they have a mental health issue, either themselves or their partner or their family member, mm-hmm. and need some time off, it can be a much more awkward conversation that we have to destigmatize. So I congratulate you on that. So let's talk about the other responses to the crisis. As you mentioned, you and your board, you know, understood the importance of flattening the curve, and I think you did a great job of of explaining that, and also the fact that you're preparing, for the new norm when we're, if you will, released from quarantine, and it's obviously going to have to be done in a measured way, whether it's mm-hmm. the Concord Family YMCA or dental office. But how did you handle? I was asked this question. How did you handle membership fees, mm-hmm. as well as were you able to have sort of virtual live workout classes in lieu mm-hmm. of, on site? Tell us about that.
Sure. Well, Tom, initially we struggled with how to deal with that. You know, it took a few days and everything. I mean, I think everybody realizes that we're all trying to figure out how to do this and how to do the right thing. We ultimately made the decision to waive our membership fees. A lot of it had to do with the fact that, look, we're all going to be impacted by this financially. We believe this obviously will be a temporary circumstance, and we want our members to be there in the long run. We want to reduce, to the extent that we can, a little bit of the financial burden for them. And so we made that decision to waive our membership fees until we reopen again. And we felt that was very important. In the meantime, this has been a work in progress, but we're getting better and better at it, and we have some really nice offerings. We've been offering live virtual workouts. We offer in the range. We have a schedule that comes out each Sunday evening and has anywhere from 15 to 14 or 15 different live offerings. And then in addition, we archive whatever we've done live, so that's available for people who would like to go back to those. And then we have pre-recorded offerings through a couple of different partners, including the YMCA 360, MOSA, which is a company that does virtual trainings, and also Silver Sneakers On Demand. So those are things that we're able to offer our members who are involved in regular fitness routines and still want to keep it going. And, you know, we've been very the response to that has been very, very positive. In fact, many of the classes have larger attendance than what we would have in our facility because of space limitations. So that's been very, very encouraging. You know, and we think about what can we do. One of my questions that we're asking, ourselves, you know, what can we do in the future that we couldn't do before? This is one of the things that we're taking a look at. How can we incorporate virtual training?
I can kind of envision, like, you have some people on, you know, when we get out of the crisis, then we're allowed to come back, and in a measured way, you have some people, you know, in the studio on site, and maybe half the class is participating virtually. No different than our last board meetings before the crisis really hit was March 12th and 13th. We just got under the wire, and half the people, you know, called in or were on Zoom, and half the people were on site. And, you know, and I think it's obviously since then, since roughly March 16th, everything we've done has either been on WebEx, a teleconference, or Zoom. But I can kind of envision this fall, if we're back, that, you know, some people would still prefer, you know, WebEx or Zoom. So I kind of envision a class where you have some people on site and some people continue virtual. So I know you're already thinking about that. And I also know you are very good to your employees and in that. And I think the big thing that I heard, you know, because we also had to furlough some of our employees, but covering the group medical is important for peace of mind. And I know you did that, so I salute you, because obviously, you know, when everybody's allowed to come back and you bring back some of these great colleagues, I mean, the fact that you know, they've been treated well in the interim, I think, really matters. So I congratulate you that. And tell us about a couple things I'm interested in. You do these kind of wellness check-ins for the more vulnerable members that you have. And then tell us a little bit of how you're working with the Red Cross as well as the Concord Coalition to End Homelessness.
Sure. Well, you know, right now we're you know, we know that there are a few different community initiatives that we're trying to support, and it has to do with really trying to mobilize our membership as well as mobilize our employees. You know, between the two of them, we have thousands of people that are connected with the Y, and we have access to them. So we're trying to make them aware of certain needs in the community. And as I think, Tom, as I think is almost common knowledge right now, the Red Cross is really needs blood. And, you know, because of the COVID-19 threat, the vast majority of blood drives have been canceled. And so we're trying to work with the Red Cross and find a way that we can communicate to our membership and direct them to see if they would be willing to consider giving blood during this very time of need. And so that's just one thing that we're doing.
And I commend you for that, because I was listening to the national president of Red Cross, and there's a huge need, because, for example, you know, the blood drives we used to have here at Delta, you know, those have been postponed, but you can still get it done by, going to the facility. So thank you for doing that. And tell us about your discussions with the Concord Coalition to End Homelessness, another great local organization.
Sure. You know, we know Ellen Groh well, and Ellen's been a terrific leader for the Coalition to End Homelessness. And, you know, right now it's an open conversation of what are your needs? Are there some things that we can try to help address? And it's nothing firm at this point in time, but it's an ongoing conversation. And we just want to be available if we can. And, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when you look at the Y's history, currently we don't offer housing as a service, but for many, many, many years we did. You know, the Y served as a boarding house and provided apartments for individuals, and has a rich history over a good portion of the 20th century. So it's not, you know, we're not that far removed. And I personally, Tom, you know that I used to work at the Friends Program. They were a shelter for homeless families. And so, you know, I personally have been connected with the issue of homelessness for the vast majority of my career.
Yeah, so, and I appreciate that and grateful for all the work you did on that. And we're somewhat fortunate in Concord that we can get our hands around the numbers. And
yeah.
Ellen, as you mentioned, Ellen does a great job as compared to some other larger cities. But it's still, we're not in denial. It's still an issue, as is, food insecurity. And we all know, and you know this better than anybody, that homelessness and food insecurity, there are many families, one paycheck away from that. And, of course, the current situation, with furloughs and layoffs, may put more people in this situation. So thanks for your attentiveness to this. And briefly, we don't have a lot of time, but tell us your thoughts on working with the Rotary on the volunteer surge, and a quick couple seconds on the Capital Region Food Program.
Sure. The Rotary Initiative is a new one, and it's really, again, trying to mobilize, in this case, it's trying to mobilize volunteers to help in two different roles. One role is to help provide support through remotely to individuals who, not medical care, but who might need assistance with getting information communicated back and forth, taking a little bit of the strains and responsibilities off of medical workers. And the second role is actually to do some case management, and both involve a fair amount of training, especially the direct case management piece. But this is an initiative that came about 2.5 weeks ago, and so I've been a member of the Rotary Club of Concord for 20 years or something like this, and so all Rotarians are made aware of this. And again, we're trying to mobilize not only our Y membership and staff, but also we're connected with the Ys across not only New Hampshire but Maine and Vermont, and so we're making the membership of all those Ys aware of this opportunity, and again trying to give them an opportunity to be involved in ways that will be meaningful and make a contribution. So
it's terrific. This is where all of your connections come into play.
Yeah.
That's what's great about the Concord area. And then just quickly, I'll take this one on the Capital Region Food Program. I know your organization is going to try to help with the distribution of food to the vulnerable population, which is probably going to grow, during this period of time.
Yeah.
So lastly, just on a personal note, you may not know this, but I kind of grew up, my father was big into the YMCA in the Boston area, so my whole life I've been a YMCA person and well aware of the long history where they used to provide, boarding, rooming situations. And my kids used to go to the Beckett YMCA in the Berkshires.
Yep.
And when I came up here, it was great to see such a vibrant YMCA. And then fast forward many, many years, my granddaughter, who lives with us in Bow, was doing the gym. Even though she couldn't walk yet, she was doing the gymnastics program. and even though she's probably too little to express it, she was definitely, disappointed when obviously it had to close. But on that note, the YMCA's website is ConcordYMCA.org. They're, as Jim mentioned, they're offering virtual workout and class sessions. So please stay in touch with the website. Jim, thanks for all you do, not only for the Concord Family YMCA, but your community leadership, which was demonstrated in all the partnerships that you talked about. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it. Thank you for what you do for our community and our state, Tom. Thank you so much.
We're all in this together. Again, ConcordYMCA.org.